lots of things going on in the world, but let me take aside this last 25 minutes, talk to our friend, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen down in London. Hello, Pamela.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. First thing I wanted to start with was, even though very few people are actually diagnosed with celiac disease, and not many more are gluten intolerant, we see no abatement to a gluten-free or gluten-restricted diet, do we? That it seems to be growing, gathering momentum that people are trying to eliminate gluten from their diet. Why is this?
Well, it's a marketing gimmick right now. There's so much more to health than just looking at gluten. The trouble is, of course, even shampoo today, beer today is sold as gluten-free. They're using it to market products of all kinds. The real trouble is that we've overconsumed commercial grain in general over the last several decades, and this has disrupted our digestive system. So a lot of people think you just need to cut out grain in order to fix this problem, but so much damage has already been done. So just pulling out gluten isn't really going to solve the problem. It's not really going to heal the damage that we've done to our digestive systems. The simple answer to this, of course, is to return to the way we used to eat grain. Our ancestors knew through wisdom that if you are going to eat grain, that some care and preparation had to take place prior to consumption. In other words, for many, many grains out there, what has to happen is a phase of essentially pre-digestion. We need to break down what are known as anti-nutrients, irritants to our digestive system that are in the grain. And so all this time, Tom, since we've been commercializing and mass producing grain products, what we should have been doing is, you know, making them properly through soaking and fermentation. Because our ancestors knew that, you know, this care had to be implemented prior to consumption of the grain. So we would have eaten things like sourdough bread, traditional sourdough bread, and that would have really solved the problem. So this, you know, idea of just eliminating gluten from our diet is a real oversimplification. And the trouble with this notion of reducing gluten also includes the fact that people can actually still eat too much grain. They may not be eating grain that is containing gluten. They may overconsume grains like, you know, millet or quinoa or buckwheat or all these alternatives and still pose themselves a lot of problems.
You know, it's an issue when you now can get gluten-free Eucharist wafers. That, you know,
Tom, I saw a gluten-free shampoo the other day.
Thankfully, finally, my hair doesn't have to suffer anymore. But I thought this would go hand in hand with your thoughts in terms of reducing carbs or reducing carbs, that if you reduce carbs, you reduce gluten. The two would work hand in hand in terms of having a healthier diet overall.
No, it's not going to happen. It's just, if people get the notion.
But if I reduce my carbs, won't I reduce my gluten?
Well, you can, but the thing is that that's not what people are doing, is they're just reducing gluten or wheat and still replacing those carbs with other carbs. And so they're really not solving the problem. They're still eating too much sugar potentially. For those who understand this notion that we have been using plant foods like wheat to displace animal foods, and that route, if they're taking that route to reduce their carbs, then you'll see health benefits. But unfortunately, a large segment of the population is just simply, you know, displacing the gluten and replacing it with, you know, millet, quinoa, rice, other sugary foods.
Is there, as you mentioned, with more traditional grains or preparation of grains, we seem to have less problems as well. Scientists have added gluten, which has just like trans fats were used for a reason, then they turned out not to be so healthy for us. Gluten was also added as well to products. So if we, I mean, is this where the increase of gluten intolerance or the incidences of celiac disease, do you think, have come from? Because there are people who can't tolerate it, but it's such a small percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point, because gluten is added into foods, fillers, binders, and so on. But I think it's a far greater complex issue than that. Really, when you look at our breakfasts today, Tom, I mean, we're eating box cereal, we're eating bagels, we're eating toast, I mean, we're eating pasta, we're eating all sorts of glutinous products today, and they're mainstream in our diets. And unfortunately, these grains have not been properly produced. They haven't been, you know, soaked or fermented prior to consumption. So we have just essentially put these foods into our mouths and damaged our digestive systems. And just removing these foods from our diet isn't solving the problem. It can provide some relief for people, but there's still going to be some damage that has to be fixed in terms of getting the digestion back up and running. Because what's happening today is the allergy business is a multi-billion dollar a year industry. So people think they have developed allergies when really they're ignoring two elements. One is that foods need to be properly prepared, in particular things like grains. And secondly, they're not eating animal fat, which really helps to assimilate many nutrients, including minerals. So if we're not eating enough animal fat in the diet, this is also going to damage our digestive system. And so because we're focusing so much on gluten, we're not looking at the whole picture in terms of getting our digestion up and running. Because if we can get our digestion up and running properly, we can tolerate even sourdough bread. In fact, there's research, Tom, that shows that celiac patients can actually digest sourdough bread. So this is even with people who have been diagnosed with celiac disease. So if we prepare the grains properly, then it shouldn't be irritating to us.
Interesting. 11:44 is our time. We've got to take a quick break in the program. Now, when we come back, a Dutch legislator has called that we need greater controls on one of the most dangerous drugs in our society, and that is sugar. So I want to get your comments on that situation. But is it too? I mean, it's one thing to say, I think it's easier for people to go gluten-free than it is to eliminate sugar in people's diets. That's going to be a tough one, Pam.
Both go hand in hand. If you're eating a lot of pastries, of course, you have the sugar and the gluten, right?
Oh, perfect. I got a whole box of donuts in the kitchen we were given last night. This is... Let me go grab one before we have our conversation. Okay. 11:44 is our time. Nutritional consultant Pam Killeen on the program talking to us about gluten and sugar is next. 11:48 is our time. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. Just taking a few minutes with one of our favorite people to talk to, nutritional consultant Pam Killeen. First of all, about gluten and the fad of going gluten-reduced or even gluten-free in your diet, especially when you just replace... for instance, the wheat with, for instance, rice flours or tapioca or any other flours, you're not really making much of a change. But I want to focus on this quote by Paul van der Velpen, who is the head of Amsterdam's health service in the Netherlands, who said, quote, and remember, this is where cannabis is legalized, quote, just like alcohol and tobacco, sugar is actually a drug. There is an important role for government. The use of sugar should be discouraged, and users should be made aware of the dangers. This may seem exaggerated and far-fetched, but sugar is the most dangerous drug of the times and can still be easily acquired everywhere.
That's right.
Now,
he also says that sugar upsets the metabolism and that whoever uses sugar wants more and more, even when they are no longer hungry. If you give somebody eggs... they'll stop eating at any given time.
Right.
You talk about this. You mention this all the time, Tom.
There is no off switch.
Don't turn off the hunger switch.
That's right. We are carnivores.
That's right.
There's no off switch until, you're almost like a dog until you get physically full. Like your stomach has to physically fill up. But with others, with animal fats and with proteins and the combination, it's like, I'm done. I'm good. At a far less of a volume, a healthier volume.
Yeah, I think most children today, what they perceive is normal. They think that all this sugar consumption is very normal, but it is not normal. And of course, it's not healthy. I mean, even what he's saying now, this head of the health services in Amsterdam, what he's saying now, the British Medical Journal said the exact same thing back in 2006, but we're not seeing any improvements in the situation. I think it's because the sugar industry obviously is very, very powerful and to a large extent controls the government and what recommendations they put out. If you look back at, say, the 1700s, we only ate about 4 pounds of sugar per person per year, and today it's something in the vicinity of 150 pounds of sugar per person per year. So this is not normal by any stretch of the imagination, and as we have been increasing our consumption of sugar, this, of course, increases inflammation in the body. And what do we see all around us? In terms of epidemics and chronic diseases, we see chronic diseases that are basically based on inflammatory conditions, things like, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and so on.
Now, when we look back a couple hundred years ago and we look at our sugar consumption, that was added sugar, correct? That if we look at now, if you had a fruit, would they count that, or even honey? Although I can't imagine honey was a major component of it, but people derive more of their sugars or glucose from grain products like bread to survive. But it wasn't, it was the added sugar to the diet that we're talking about, you know, the teaspoon in your coffee added up every day, that the sugar in the baked goods, the sugar everywhere, that's the sugar we're talking about, not necessarily naturally occurring sugars in fruits or even honey.
That's right. And okay. If you look at nature, though, Tom, and you see that nature dictates to us that historically sugar was always relatively difficult to obtain. Even if you look at honey, I mean, the bees are there protecting their honey. It was difficult to obtain honey. It was difficult to extract sugar from cane and beets and so on. It's not an easy process by any stretch of the imagination to concentrate sugar. That's just been new to humankind. Back in the 1700s, if we had a cube of sugar, you had to have been fairly wealthy to obtain that cube of sugar at the time. It wasn't something that was very well or very easy to obtain. Today, unfortunately, it's just everywhere. It's like this researcher in Amsterdam says, this is the most widely available drug in society today.
But do we need to go? He's calling for warning labels and put it on that maybe there should be a sugar tax. But don't we find the best way is to just educate the people? I don't know how much warning labels did with cigarettes, but have a greater education that said you're going to die earlier if you smoke, and these are the results. I don't know if a warning label is the way to go, but isn't greater education, because people will always rebel when, don't tell me what to put in my body, especially this thing that tastes so good.
That's the trouble, is because so many people are addicted to sugar today, they don't want their candy taken away from them. So they're going to resist any notion of reducing consumption of sugar. And then you have, of course, the sugar industry is going to fight back. And we've seen this time and time again. Even the World Health Organization back in 2003 published a report saying that processed foods were causing chronic diseases today. And when they wrote that report, they said, you know, we needed to reduce our consumption of sugar. And the sugar industry essentially threatened the American government, because they wanted the American government to threaten the World Health Organization to not publish that report, putting out these warnings. So we see this type of manipulation going on at international levels, evidence that the sugar industry is doing everything they can to protect their lobby, to protect their profits. So I think you're right. I don't think that we can lobby the government to get them to do a better job at regulating sugar. I think that's just going to be fighting an uphill battle. Essentially, what you're saying is correct, that in order to fix this healthcare system, we have to educate the masses, and the masses need to take their health under their own control, because we're not going to get the correct information from the government. The lobbies are just way too powerful.
Or even if we did, imagine that the government said it. I think people would be resistant to a government telling them what food you can eat, or a tax
that's been going on forever, where all the lobby groups use this mantra. It's very, very, you know, they parrot it all the time. Whenever there's any kind of resistance that's going to reduce their profits, they always say, oh, people don't want to live in a nanny state. Right? You hear that all the time.
Well, in some cases, it is true, though. I mean, people don't want to be told and hectored and lectured what to eat. They want to. The most effective way I find is people, when you get them or lead them to the water and they see for themselves, it's like, you know what? If they make up their own minds, they become that much more powerful in terms of, you know what? This is not right. And the amazing thing is, we look at Europe and we look at our unhealthy lifestyles and diets here in North America. And I always go back to when we eat the same calories, but we're so much fatter, something must be wrong with how we did it. And we look at Europe. Oh, Europe, they're so healthy. The Dutch, though, I mean, this article, it says the number of obese people in the Netherlands has doubled over the last decade. And here we always think of Europe as, oh, they're much more healthy. They have better meals. They're more active. You know, they're outside more. And it's like, yeah, they're suffering from obesity as well.
Mm-hmm. As soon as you see any culture start integrating more westernized, industrialized foods in their diet, that's when you start to see their health deteriorate. And so, and this is based on the work of people like Dr. Weston A. Price. As soon as he would go into cultures where they were using these newfangled foods, that's where you start to see a deterioration of both mental and physical health. But if people maintain their ancestral diet, that's when you see a robust health. And I think the more people realize this association, the more we can take more proactive measures to save this province from going bankrupt. Right now, of course, the government and so on, they're really not in a position to tell people what to eat. They've been telling us the wrong advice now for so many decades.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, how do you trust the government when they've been telling you, you know, well, look at the canned food guide. Well, that's wrong. Yeah, you've been pushing.
Why we're so sick today.
Yeah, you've been pushing this wrong food guide and this pyramid. And it's like, oh my gosh, you guys got it upside down almost.
I think we can change or improve the situation just one family at a time as soon as people start seeing the common sense behind returning to an ancestral diet. And then we can take better control of our health. We can see a reduction of healthcare costs, improved quality of life, and so on. Because right now, I think waiting for the government to improve the situation, I think we're all going to end up in the grave before that happens.
Pam, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Tom. Take care.
Take care. Different sort of topic on a very busy day, but not so easy and, you know, not necessarily so wise to go all gluten-free, depending on what you switch with. But as well, more and more people, I mean, here's the head of Amsterdam's health service. Sugar is the most dangerous product we have in the world. Most dangerous drug of the times. We have warning labels and taxes. I don't know if people accept it. However, the case against sugar is getting stronger and stronger every day, said the sugar addict as he signed off the program. Have yourself a great afternoon. Don't forget, I'm next with Rod Mahood. Game on! Coming up on 610 CKTV.